People fear an absolute ideal. This is Dr. Herbert L. Byerly, Dean of the University of Healing here in Capa, California, with the Absolute Philosopher. People fear an absolute ideal. Now, what is an absolute ideal? We spoke about it in a way last evening, as we talked about the pure absolute form is united with matter, objective idealism. People fear an absolute ideal. You see, again, we come back to the word is. The is the objectified form. It's the thought form. Now, is this the is of a pitcher? I'm holding a pitcher here for water. Is this an ideal pitcher? Is this the is of a pitcher? Is this the representation of all pitchers? And of course it is not. Why is it not? The reason it is not is because it's not absolute. It's not the ideal. It has height. It has circumference. It has capacity. It has all of these things, you understand? And the ideal does not have that. Now, does every pitcher have a handle? Does every pitcher, is it made out of plastic like this one is? Is every pitcher made out of pure glass? Is every pitcher a pitcher? Now, what would we define a pitcher as? We define a pitcher as something which contains a liquid that is used to serve that liquid in some way. Now, can I take the pitcher and fill it full of water and wash the dog with it? Yes. Yes, I can do anything. Can I take the pitcher and go fill the bird's sweet feeder out here? Put some sugar in there and water in there and put it in their feeder for them. Yes, I can. Can I have a pitcher that doesn't have a handle? Well, basically we think pitcher handle. Now, does a pitcher have lips on it? This pitcher has lips on it. Now, all pitchers don't have lips. Some pitchers, huh?
Lips.
Yeah.
In German, it's
eine Schnute. Oh, that's nice. You have your little, that's okay, you have your little wits between yourselves there. But these are the lips of the pitcher that funnel the water or the funnel the fluid. Now, what has Ingeborg done? Ingeborg has taken this pitcher and she's put flowers in there. Ingeborg has taken this pitcher and she put some fruit in there. She put some grapes in there. Ingeborg has taken this pitcher and she has taken some juice and put it in there. Ingeborg has taken that pitcher and she put it in the dishwasher. And she washed it in the dishwasher. Now, isn't that terrible? Isn't that terrible to wash a pitcher in the dishwasher? No. Because it is one that can be used to wash in the dishwasher. Now, is there some pitchers you cannot wash in the dishwasher? Well, some that are very fragile should be handled a little more gently. Yes, that's true. But you see, what is the ideal pitcher? What is the ideal picture? What? How do we define the ideal picture? How do we talk about the ideal picture? I will say of water, so that my picture word doesn't sound like picture on the wall, you know. How do we define the ideal picture for holding something? Well, we can't. We cannot define the ideal except by giving relationships, by saying a water pitcher, a milk pitcher, a flower pitcher, a pitcher, well, that's a scoop, but a pitcher can be used as a scoop too. You can take this, and Rex would love you if you took this. and filled it up with food and put it in his bowl. He would just eat until his sides burst. But he would love it when you use that as a scoop. But you see, this is one of the things that we have to come to a decision about. What definition do we give to the ideal? Now, let's just depart from the picture for a moment and let's look at the word house. Ingeborg, define the ideal house. Define the ideal house. No, no. We're not talking about the house inside of us, the temple inside of us. We're talking about a physical house that exists in the physical world for whatever a house is. What does the dictionary define house as?
A place where a family has his residence.
Now, that's perfect. Do you know what she just said? Do you know what she just said? Did you say what she said? Say it. Now, build it. Go ahead, build it. No, no, build it. Bow it. All right, go ahead. Now, can you do that? No. Not by her description. She didn't tell you how many rooms it has. She didn't tell you how tall it was, and she didn't tell you the square feet it has. She didn't tell you how many doors and windows it has, whether the garage is attached or come part of the house. Or she didn't tell you anything. She just said a house is a place where people live. That's house. Now, let's just play a game and change the word to home. Now, what is a home? Ingeborg, what's a home?
Home is a place, also a place.
Don't, that's right, just come on.
A family or single person has a living.
A place where people live. It's not a family or a single person or this or that. See, right away, when you start getting particular, then you're starting to define it. It's a place where people live. Now, what does the dictionary say? It says a place where people live. Now, does that describe an ideal house? Now, each one of us, when we say the word house, we think of a house that we live in, perhaps, or that we're familiar with. And so, our ideal would be sort of a representation of a house that we have known. Now, Sylvia, she wants a little house by the side of the road with a white picket fence and a little garden around it. And she would like her Mercedes in the garage, and she'd like her helicopter in the backyard and her private pilot there. And she would like her gardener taking care of the garden and her handyman painting the white picket fence white all the time and taking care of the house. Can you understand? Now, is that how she describes the house? Can you understand that? Now, is that your description of a house? No. Okay, now, you see, you cannot take her description of a house and yours and yours and yours and have them really describe a house. A house has to be thought of in its ideal form. A house is a place where people live. Now, answer me this with one word. Where do animals live? I'm sorry? Where do animals live? You. Tell me. Animals live in a building. What is the building called? For instance, the farm. Where do the animals live in the farm?
A barn.
A barn. That's a perfect word. The animals live in a barn. Now, Ingeborg, describe what the dictionary says is the definition of a barn.
A barn is a place where it's a...
Don't be particular.
For the food for animals. The cover of the animals.
Don't be particular. We are talking about a house is what? please, quickly. All right, a house is where people live, right? Now, why didn't you say where the people have their food and where they have their vegetables and where they have their milk and where they have the refrigerator and stove? Because that's not the point. That's not the point. It's a place where people live, right? That's what you said. Now, what is a barn?
The barn is for animals.
It's a place where animals live. You see, you take the same definition. You see, you said it before, and you know it. But see, don't ad lib. Don't get so imaginative. Just keep it simple, because the ideal is absolutely simple. In fact, the ideal is so simple, it has no words virtually that describe it. A house is a place where people live. Well, that's true. But does a house have four walls? That might not. Ellen? What might a house have if it doesn't have four walls? It might have three walls. It might have two walls. With, and it might have eight walls. And it might have walls on the roof, we hadn't got to. But the house doesn't necessarily have a roof. If you say, the roof blew off of that house, the house is still there, isn't it? The window blew out of that house, but the house is still there. The tornado came by and whoosh, you know, took off the roof and pulled out the windows and took off the door, and the house is still there. The house is still there without windows, without doors, without a roof. You see? And then Dorothy, I don't think we're in Kansas anymore, she said to Toto, her puppy dog, when her house was lifted up by the tornado, remember? And so when the house landed, did the house have a basement? When it landed, did it have a basement? No, it left the basement back in Kansas. You see? Now, you see, when you start thinking in terms of even the silliness of this here, the house is not a house because it has a basement. It's not a house because it has walls. It's not a house because it has a roof or ceiling or because it has windows and doors. A house is a house because that's where people live. Now, I would like to invite you to my house. I live in that cave up there. That's my house. That's my home. That's where I live, my house. Now, Ellen, where do little mice have their house?
In a hole.
See, she's putting mice in a hole in the ground, and she's calling the hole in the ground a house. Now, where do frogs live?
Under the rocks.
Under rocks. That's their home, under rocks. Now, where do dogs live?
In their house.
In a dog house. Yeah, yeah. But you see, the house is an ideal concept. It has nothing to do with its size, its shape, its accoutrements. It has only to do with the concept, the ideal concept of what a house is. So people fear absolute ideal because it has no dimension to it. It has no music to it. You see, Sylvia has her little house by the side of the road with a white picket fence and a garden in back and a garden in front and flowers, and she's sitting in her rocking chair out in the front porch watching the people go by and saying, hi, you know, and bored silly, you know. But anyhow, that's her little house, you see. Now, let's look at it another way, and perhaps he'll listen to this too. We have a dear friend we call Gregor Mueller. And Gregor always wanted to have his own house. And I said to Gregor, Gregor, what do you want the house to be? How do you want to describe the house? Until you have an idea what that house is, you will not have it. So Gregor had his own mobile home down here, 60 feet long, 13 feet wide, beautiful, lots of rooms. It could be fixed up a little better because it had been used for different things, but he didn't appreciate it. He didn't appreciate it. We told him it's his, so he gave it away. And he was working for another man, and he gave it to that man. And so that man said, Gregor, make this into a nice house. So Gregor fixed it up inside, cleaned it up, put on new wall paneling, put on new wallpaper. He painted the inside, painted the outside, painted everything, fixed the window. And he brought us over to look at it. We said, wow, is that beautiful? Man, that's what we gave away. No, that's not what we gave away. We gave away something we didn't want, something that was not usable to us. And this man paid to make it something usable to him. And he and his wife just dearly loved to go there and live there. Now, Greg could have had that. It was his. And Greg took the other trailer, a little white house. And I lived in it for years, and it was a lovely little place, and it was fantastic. And even as it was abandoned, it still was very nice. It still was just wonderful. It could have been recarpeted and done a few little things to it. It would have been lovely. But he treated it like a trash heap. And so therefore, it was not his lovely home. Then he went up to live with Mark, my son, and he took another one of our houses, a motorhome that we had, and we gave it to my son because we had no use for it. And so it was a good one. And so what did he do? Instead of fixing the roof, he builds a roof over the roof to keep it from leaking in. You know, the simple thing would have been to put a new roof on it instead of putting this gigantic big framework on it. But he was more into putting gigantic frameworks on things. But you see, then Gregor went to work for a man, and he was his caretaker. And the man gave him the caretaker's house, a most gorgeous house that you could ever want. Beautiful hardwood floors, beautiful brand new basement with a garage downstairs and laundry room and bedrooms upstairs and bathroom and a decks all the way around. Gorgeous in the middle of a forest, and all he had to do was be the caretaker. And Gregor didn't appreciate it. He said it's not his. You understand? He said it's not his. Now he's moved in with his girlfriend, and he's living in her house. And it's still not his house. And if they get married, it'll still be her house. Not because they're not married and it belongs half and half, but because it's not his house. He will always be dreaming of his house. When will Gregor have his house? The moment Gregor says, I have my house. Esther, in every house that you have lived, how many houses would you say over the years that you have lived in, that you rented or owned? How many houses? 5, 10? Schnell.
Five.
Okay. Thank you. 5 houses. Now, how were those houses? Were they nice houses or were they not nice? And I'm not asking you about their construction. Was there love in those houses? Did you put your heart in those houses? Did you enjoy living in those houses? Yeah. Okay. So what were they? Were they the ideal house? Yes. Because you lived in it and you loved in it and you were happy in it. You understand? Now, it doesn't matter that it was a mansion. It doesn't matter that it was a hovel. It doesn't matter what it was. It was your house with your love and your joy, and you remember it with great delight. Perhaps one house you don't remember with delight because it was an unhappy time, maybe that someone died there or something. But still, it was a happy house. You see? Now, if you don't delight in every piece of property you have, in every trailer you have, in every house you live in, you will never find your perfect house. You will never live in your absolute ideal house. You'll never know it because you haven't delighted in everything you have as you went along. The ideal is indescribable. The absolute ideal is very definitely not describable. You cannot say what it looks like. But you can say what the ideal absolute house feels like and what it looks like. It looks beautiful. What do you mean? It just looks beautiful. What color is it? I don't know. What's it made of? Wood, brick, stone? I don't know. But it just looks great. It's the absolute house. Now, you go in dreams, and you go back in your dreams, and you're visiting people in their home. And the home is filled with love, and you feel very good there. Now, could you tell what that house was built like? Could you tell what the structure was without purposefully going there and thinking about it? No. All you know is that it's an ideal house filled with love, filled with harmony, and filled with peace. And that's exactly what it is. Now, people fear an absolute ideal because they feel it has no dimensions. And the dimensions that an absolute ideal should have are love, delight, appreciation, excitement, all of those things that are absolute intangibles, because that's who we are. That's what absolute's all about. Indefinable, indescribable, delighted in every way. It's fantastic. So, my friends, you have no fear of the absolute ideal, so long as you have found a house that you lived in, that you loved in, so long as you have found yourself to be your ideal, that you live in your pure heart, your pure soul. I live in my ideal spirit, mind, and body. Can you do it any better than that? That's what it's all about. So, I love you, I love you, I love you, and have a wonderful evening.